is getting warmer, the sun is out more, and really I think a nice way to spend Easter would be a cruise down the Catalan coast, enjoying the sights of Barcelona, Tarragona, etc. And that's pretty much what Barcelona are doing at the moment. They are cruising towards the La Liga title. They're on the cusp of glory, and a 2-0 win against Athletic Club on Sunday pretty much confirmed that. Hello and welcome to Marca's Eye on La Liga. I am Mark Mayer, your host as per usual, and talking a very interesting weekend of La Liga action. Plenty of goals, some upsets here and there, and certainly we'll be talking about a title race that is done and done, and I mean done. And that is Ewan McTeer. How's it going?
Yeah, good. It was quite a weekend, wasn't it? All the big games really saved up for Sunday. I don't know what the Spanish equivalent of Super Sunday is. I don't know, Dominant Domingo or something, but it was really good fun.
Yeah, they just made sure that it was when I was on shift for Marco English that was when all the big games were out, so plenty to keep us active on the website, and hopefully everyone at home being able to log in and see what we've been talking about. We'll talk about Barcelona and Atletico first. Atletico 2-1 losers at Villarreal on Sunday evening. Surely that is the title race done now. 11-point gap, 9 games to go. And, I mean, what happened, Ewan, for Atletico? This was a game that they were 1-0 up in, 10 minutes to go. They took Griezmann off, which is a bit of a forebearer to bad things happening. And it just collapsed. Enesu now, who has been one of the sort of quietest strikers in La Liga all season, managed to pop up with a late brace, and then Vitolo getting sent off. I mean, answers on a postcard if anyone can really work out what Vitolo got sent off for in injury time. But it was a very untypical collapse, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, yes, what happened to Atletico and Villarreal happened. I mean, this always happens. Like, if Atletico Madrid have a bogey team, it's definitely Villarreal. They've now not won any of their past 6 against them, going all the way back to April 2015 was the last time they actually managed to beat Villarreal, which, when you consider all the success Atletico Madrid have had in that time, I mean, that's just wild. And there's not really an explanation for it, because Villarreal have been able to beat Atletico in a number of different ways. I mean, last year they won this match 3-0 in one of the worst performances Atletico have had since Simeone took over, and there were real doubts about whether he could still squeeze the best out of this squad. And then Villarreal happened to win one of the last games at the Calderon as well, but Atletico should have won that about 5 or 6-0. There's just something about those yellow jerseys that Atletico can't seem to cope with.
Yeah, I think the thing is for Atletico now, the priority for so long has been on the Europa League and winning that. Certainly they have a decent chance of going on. Sporting Lisbon they've got in the quarterfinals. But when the international break's over, it's not going to be straightforward for Atletico, is it? They host Deportivo on the first game back. Then it's the Sporting game, 2 legs either side of a Real Madrid game. And, I mean, let's imagine a scenario for a minute where Atletico are knocked out of the Europa League and they lose the Madrid derby, and then they're on the verge of, you know, maybe finishing third and Europe might be gone. It's going to be a huge sort of... The pressure has been ramped up off the back of this, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has, and it doesn't help that they've got such a short squad. I mean, Felipe Luis's injury, I mean, it looks like he might be back for the very last couple of games of the season, maybe back for the World Cup, but he's basically out for most of the rest of the season, and that leaves Atletico with just 16 outfield players in their senior squad because they sold so many in January. And it's not great when they really are still going on two fronts, and, you know, whether they still have hope of somehow pulling off a miraculous run to the league title, they do still have to focus on La Liga, because, like you mentioned, they've got Real Madrid just there and they could overtake them just 4 points behind. So it's really tough for Atletico because they've just got so few players and they can't really afford any more injuries. I mean, Lucas Hernandez is the sort of backup centre-back and left-back at the moment, and if one more injury was to hit that defence, then they're going to be really struggling. So it's going to be tricky for Atletico, but at least if it all does go terribly, terribly wrong, you would think they had enough of an advantage to still make top 3 and to get that automatic Champions League qualification. And if they do that, I'm sure that was at the start of the season the sort of minimum objective. So it can't go too bad, surely.
Yeah, one of the things I think that's going to become a real theme for the end of the season. I mean, the title race, as we say, is done. The top four race, Valencia aren't going to be caught by Sevilla, who, you know, Sevilla lost at Leganes on the weekend. Relegation seems to be almost done and dusted. The top two race between sort of Atletico and Real Madrid, maybe Valencia getting involved as well, I think is going to be one of the sort of defining things to look at towards the end of the season. I do suspect that Real Madrid are going to really be up for closing that gap, and that will really incentivise them, as well as the Champions League, obviously. So we'll keep an eye on that as we move forward. I want to quickly, before we go on to Barcelona, do you think that this is a sort of theme that has emerged recently, in the sense of, as I say, La Liga's title race, top four, relegation almost done. Last season, the top four was done by this time, relegation was virtually done. You go back to 2015-16, the title race looked done, although it kind of wasn't, as Real Madrid caught Barcelona and almost leapfrogged them. The top four was basically done, relegation was kind of alive. You go back further and things were a bit more competitive. But it is a bit of a weird season, this, isn't it? We're going to get towards the final few games of the season kind of wondering exactly what is going to be interesting for us.
Yeah, strange, because it seems like it's been one of the more interesting seasons in a while. You know, Real Madrid's struggles have been sort of peculiar and sort of fascinating to try and work out. Atletico Madrid pushing Barcelona was really interesting. And then it seemed at one point the relegation battle was going to involve, you know, five or six teams. And just in the last maybe two or three weeks, as you mentioned, all these gaps have really lengthened. When just, you know, at the start of March, they were everything was so tight in all of these races.
Yeah, I think with the relegation zone, obviously Levante have now picked up 7 points in their last 9 games. Alaves have flown away, and even if they've dropped off a little bit now, it doesn't really matter. And nobody like Leganes or Espanyol has been that bad to be caught up, with Las Palmas drawing at Deportivo La Coruña to really sort of continue that sense that the bottom three is done and dusted. We'll keep an eye on that as the weeks go by and sort of inform everyone on the podcast if it gets interesting again, no doubt, on Marca English. As the match reports come in, you'll be able to see how that is unfolding. Barcelona, we'll talk about now, as we say, 2-0 against Athletic Club on the weekend. I mean, why would you need to rotate this team, Ewan, when it's every game is just so easy? It is pure cruise control, isn't it? 8 minutes and 30 minutes of the goals went in. After that, you know, sit back, nice and easy. Dembele coming of age. There's talk about Valverde acknowledging the talk about the treble, should I say. Valverde, I'll quickly say that he said, on the weekend, I'm not afraid that people will begin to expect us to win the treble. They may say we have a chance, but it's very far away. Passion comes to the fore when you win, and the opposite happens when you lose or draw. Our players just need to focus on continuing in this way. I mean, it's just all going so nicely, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, picking up on your point about why would you rotate and stuff at this point when it is going so easily. Like, I was just baffled this weekend at how many coaches rotated. I mean, it always strikes me as just so odd that coaches want to rest their players for next week's international matches. I mean, Atletico Madrid, for example, take off Griezmann with around, well, I think it was about 15 minutes to go. And for what? For Didier Deschamps to be able to benefit from a extra fresh Griezmann in a friendly. I mean, I just never quite understand when coaches rest players the week before an international break, when there are important points. And from Barcelona's point of view, I mean, when you're winning, it's you know, you can afford to give some players a rest. But in this game, I'm not quite sure why you would. And yeah, I mean, Barcelona, it was about as routine a win as it could possibly be, and it was kind of expected. I think Athletic Club have given them some tough games over the years, but this year they're just nobody really expected them to trouble them at Camp Nou. And that's kind of how it turned out, isn't it?
It'll be interesting to see if Jose Zaganda keeps his job past the end of the season. Athletic Club out of Europe now as well. It's kind of, you know, it's always one of those questions for Athletic Club. There's such a team with such great identity, but how do you square that circle of having identity and success? The sort of leaders of the club will have to work that out going forward. One of the key points coming out of Barcelona in the past few weeks has been Andres Iniesta. He's acknowledged himself there's a chance that he'll be leaving in the summer, maybe as late as January, with Arthur, the Gremio midfielder. He's already been signed, but they don't know when he's going to be coming in. There's kind of a sense that he'll be dropping in when Iniesta leaves, should Iniesta leave. Offers from China, America on the table. I'm not sure I can really imagine a Barcelona without Iniesta. It does feel so weird that suddenly, it is kind of suddenly that all this has come about. And he said that he's going to decide by the end of April whether he does leave. I mean, how do you feel about this? Is it something that, I mean, Xavi left? Does it make sense in your mind, or is it just a bit of a sad story that Iniesta might be leaving?
Yeah, I'll need to stop sniffling here, because it really is going to be a sad day when he leaves. I mean, even for non-Barcelona fans, I mean, you see the affection he receives around Spain whenever he gets subbed on, subbed off, and and I think it's going to be a massive loss to all of La Liga and Spanish football when he does move away. And it does look like when he leaves Barcelona, he's not maybe going to go for that sort of go back home, play for a smaller Spanish club. It looks like he's going to go abroad and most likely to China. And I think we're going to almost forget about him a little bit, because, let's be honest, nobody in Spain is really going to be following the China League, even with Iniesta in it. And if he thinks he's no longer good enough to play for Barcelona, then, of course, you imagine he's stepping down from the national team as well. So I feel like it's going to be quite sudden, all of us, like maybe this summer or whenever it happens. Very suddenly, Iniesta is just going to sort of disappear from the limelight of Spanish football, which is going to be quite strange to take, when obviously he is the guy who scored the goal for Spanish football's biggest ever day.
Do you think it will diminish his reputation at all? Do you think that when people look at Iniesta and say, oh, obviously he scored the World Cup winning goal and all those sort of things, that maybe the fact that he had been a one-club man would have paid so much more in his favour than going to China or America? You look at Xavi and how he's still such a vocal presence in the media, and he still talks about what's going on in football. But the fact that he's out in Qatar, and I think he's had some gripes with Cristiano Ronaldo kind of based around that as well. I think that it will kind of lead to Spanish fans thinking, oh, well, you know, you've only gone there for payday and we thought you were better than that.
A little bit, but I get quite annoyed about the sort of fawning over the one club man kind of idea, because I think it takes a really special set of circumstances for a player to be able to spend their whole career at one team. I mean, first of all, you have to have the team at sort of a low ebb when you're coming through, so that you can break through and break in. And then when you reach your peak, you want that club to be reaching their peak as well. And then for you to be able to stay when you're 35, 36, when you're not as good, for you to be able to stay at a very top club, you almost need them to sort of hit that low ebb again. And I mean, you look at someone like Totti's career, and it was able to work because when he was at his very best, you know, Roma were also at their very best. And then when he was sort of declining, Roma were declining a little bit, and there was still a place for him in that team. I mean, if Roma had been, you know, in Champions League finals, semi-finals every season, Totti wouldn't have had the place, and maybe he would have had to move on as well and take that payday. So I'm never too won over by the one club man idea. I think it takes a bit of luck along the way for those circumstances to develop. So I wouldn't be too, I don't think it would tarnish his legacy too much. But again, of course, if he does move to China, there's no doubting that, just like Xavi over to Qatar, it would be for the money. And I suppose, you know, a player's got to cash in at his last few years of his career. I mean, Iniesta, we don't know how profitable that winery is going to be, so maybe he does have to get another payday and then retire out to the vineyards and sell some wine.
I certainly wouldn't blame anyone for cashing in on what is undoubtedly an incredibly talented, incredible ability he's got with football that has earned him so much money and will continue to. I certainly don't think there are many people listening to this who would think that, no, actually, I wouldn't take any money for that. I'll do it for free every week, especially when you get to that level of the game.
When you and I both get a bit older and the Chinese Ion Chinese football podcast comes along, you know we're both going to go over to China and take that payday when we're reaching our limelight.
I'll be there. It'll be state broadcast as well, so it'll be nice and easy. They'll tell us exactly what to say every week, and we'll just be official mouthpieces. It'll be nice and easy, that. So no having to come up with my own opinions, which is certainly the difficulty for this. I do, the Totti point, I think, is also very good, because Totti, his last season last year, I mean, I follow Roma to an extent, and it just felt, even then, it just felt like a bit of a sideshow that didn't need to be there. And the fear is, with Iniesta, that he would start to sort of diminish and only be like a last 20 minutes, oh, here he is, let's give a nice round of applause sort of game, And, you know, maybe that's what he's out to avoid as well. Final point on Barcelona before we go on to Real Madrid. Roma is the team that they've got in the quarterfinal of the Champions League. Good draw, I think, is obvious to say. Easy draw, maybe. They've got to go to the Stadio Olimpico second. Do you see this being a sort of banana skin for them? Or is Roma, you know, they're a good attacking team, not so great in defence. Few good players, no world-class players. It's kind of the ideal draw for Barcelona.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think it's the ideal draw for Barcelona. The only negative side of the draw maybe is that they do have the second leg away from home, which can be a bit of a disadvantage. But the way they're playing in defence right now, it wouldn't surprise me if they keep a clean sheet in that first leg. And if they win that 1-0, 2-0 or something like that, then you really don't see a way back from Roma, even with them having a second leg and at the Olimpico.
I certainly can't see Barcelona not scoring at the Olimpico, so there's probably going to be an away goal in that for them as well. We'll be talking about Real Madrid versus Juventus in a moment. We'll have a short break now, and we'll get onto that and Real Madrid's 6-3 win over Girona. Eyes on Juventus then for Real Madrid. The La Liga season, as we sort of discussed, very much over to a large extent, and it's all about who's going to start in Turin for that first leg of the quarter final. Interesting game against Girona. I'm not sure Juventus are going to be watching that and feeling very comfortable, because they'll be saying, are we going to get the assassins that scored 6 goals, or are we going to be getting the clowns that conceded 3 goals? And Girona's goals weren't anything particularly special. Real Madrid's goals, obviously, you know, the sheer weight of them, the sheer quantity, played the effect. Cristiano Ronaldo getting 4 goals, obviously. This is the most ferocious of Zidane's Real Madrid teams, I think. But then they're just so, so dozy in defence.
Yeah, especially with crosses into the box. I mean, to concede 3 headers in one game for a top European team is just, it's really quite shocking. But Juventus don't strike me as a team that score many goals for the air. I mean, the Champions League this season, they've only got 1 header. So I wonder if, I mean, that's an obvious weakness for Real Madrid, but I don't know if it necessarily matches up with a strength of Juventus. So maybe Sergio Ramos and Rafael Varane can sleep easy knowing that they might not have to get attacked too much through the air when they do take on Juventus.
Yeah, Ramos was missing for the Sunday win over Girona. Do you think that Juventus is a harder game than PSG sort of represented? Obviously, PSG had an incredible goal-scoring record and were, you know, very, very good for the first half of the season in Europe as well as in Ligue 1. But Juventus, they have that experience. They have beaten Real Madrid over 2 legs in the last time that they played Real Madrid over 2 legs. Obviously, they lost the final in Cardiff last year, so is the experience and is the sort of defensive nous that Juventus have, is that actually a more difficult thing to face in a Champions League game compared to facing the sort of goal-scoring impetus that PSG would have had?
Yeah, I think generally it is. I mean, Juventus have done so well in this tournament in the last few years, 2 finals, and you know, defence maybe doesn't win championships, but maybe in Juventus' case it gets them to the final. And yeah, Juventus seem as the kind of team that over 2 legs are so hard to knock out. And something after that Spurs win at Wembley, I mean, there just seemed to be a real sort of, that almost, if they do go on and do something really special in this Champions League, I think that's going to be a turning point, because they were staring at last 16 exit and, you know, Buffon's last Champions League game, all of this narrative, and then they turned it around and there were really euphoric scenes as if they just won the whole thing. And it really seemed like, after having come through that really sticky situation, there's a sense of belief about this Juventus team. And as much as Real Madrid get geared up for the Champions League, I feel like Juventus have come so close on the past few seasons that if there's a team after Real Madrid that are the next most motivated team for this Champions League, I think it's probably Juventus. So, yeah, it's going to be a real clash of the Titans in this one. And, yeah, we're going to see if Real Madrid's attacking game can overcome this Juventus stingy defence.
Yeah, on that point about Juventus' motivation, I think it's difficult to, or it's easy rather, to forget that Juventus have struggled in Serie A for the start of the season. They've been behind Napoli for a long period and they've been in incredible form since the turn of the year, and they are now 2 points ahead of Napoli in Serie A. So they have been in the doldrums, relatively speaking, at the start of the season. They have fought back, and I think it's important to remember that these sort of teams, even though they are, you know, giants of world football, they do go through the same ebbs and flows of a lot of other teams. And Juventus at the moment certainly are at a high point, and it will be interesting to see what sort of game they take to Real Madrid. And you say about the narrative of Buffon's last Champions League game, having it at the Bernabeu will certainly also be a big narrative that no doubt will be covering on Market English. We'll go on to our In Focus section. We're going to be talking about the internationals very briefly after this to round off the show. But I just want to get a point on the Girona game from you. Because, I mean, did you ever think that Girona were going to snatch this game? It came back so many times that Real Madrid, you know, 1-0 up, 1-1, then 4-1 up, then back to 4-2. It could have very easily been 4-3 at one point, and then at 5-3, 6-3, etc., etc. Did you ever think that Girona were actually going to be able to steal this game, or was this always the case that Real Madrid's firepower was always going to be enough to see them through?
Yeah, I think when the first equaliser went in and it was 1-1, I think at that point there was a sort of sense of, right, how are Real Madrid going to react to this? Because we've actually seen Real Madrid throw a lot of you know, leads away this season. They've been so good at the start of games, done really well in first halves, and then have collapsed late on. And they often, once they concede one goal, they really start to panic and maybe concede another. So after that, Girona, the first one went in, you sort of wondered, okay, are Real Madrid going to, because they've been so good up to that point, and you wondered whether they're just going to let all that go to waste and panic. But to their credit, they didn't, and they fired back. And after going a couple of goals up, I don't think at that point it ever looked like Girona were going to come back. But fair play to Girona for sticking in there right to the end. I mean, they're a really special team as well.
Certainly are. We'll be singing their praises furthermore on this show if they continue to battle for the Europa League. They're still right in that mix, and will be certainly, as I say, one of the big things to look at towards the end of the season. However, we now have a couple of weeks off. Marca's Iron La Liga will not be back next week because it will be the internationals, and quite frankly, if it's friendlies, then we all deserve a little bit of a break. There's quite a few big friendlies though. There's certainly plenty to keep an eye on, and we'll be discussing those in just a few moments' time. So what can we really learn from friendlies just before World Cup? Obviously, friendlies, generally speaking, aren't too interesting to us. We're going to have the UEFA Nations League dropping in to sort of solve that riddle, or certainly have a good go at it. But we're a few months away now. This is kind of the last chance that a lot of players will get to impress, and there are a substantial amount of interesting games to look at. On the Friday, Germany versus Spain, Italy, Argentina, Netherlands versus England, which yours truly will be at, France, Colombia, and Russia, Brazil. What are you expecting to see from these sort of games? Are you expecting Spain to show their A game against Germany, or England to go to Holland and show their starting 11 for the first game? Or are these actually, you know, nothing's really going to happen that's worth anything for going to the World Cup?
Yeah, I think the least interesting thing is actually the games. I think the most interesting thing of this international break is who the coaches have named in their squads. And that obviously happened last week, because you get a glimpse into which kind of players might be looking at a call-up. I mean, someone like Lucas Vazquez, okay, you realise Lopetegui is now trusting him. The England squad, there were a few sort of wild card names in there that you think maybe they've now got a chance because of a good Premier League season. So that's really interesting to sort of get an idea of who might be going to the World Cup. The games themselves, because they're also big, there's so many blockbuster clashes there that they're probably going to be decided by fine margins, because it always is with the matches between the big teams. So I don't really think they're going to tell us all that much about what we can expect at the World Cup, but it's always good fun when you see a Germany-Spain or Holland-England or Italy-Argentina. There's some really interesting games there to take a look at.
Yeah, Tuesday evening we'll see Spain versus Argentina at the Wanda Metropolitano. Germany versus Brazil, England, Italy and Russia-France are the sort of big bellwether clashes, as you say. Who would you put down as your favourite for the World Cup at this stage? Are we going to think that... I think that Spain probably have the strongest squad. We've done an article on Marca in English about the players that aren't in the Spanish team. But a lot of the sort of Premier League sort of well-known players, such as Juan Mata, Alvaro Morata, missing out this time. There's a lot of decent players not in the Spain squad. And I'd probably say they have the best squad, but I'm not sure that necessarily makes them favourites. I think when it comes down to favourites, always have to look to the team with the experience, and Germany certainly have that experience for me and should be favourites.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of people mention Brazil, and I'm not sure if I'm too convinced by Brazil. I think they've got so many exciting players, but you do wonder if they're going to gel together in the way that will take them to World Cup, because so many of the exciting players they've got in the squad weren't at the last World Cup or weren't starting at the last World Cup. So I'm not sure if they necessarily have that experience all the way through that starting 11. And I have to agree with you. I think Spain probably have the best squad, but sometimes that doesn't necessarily lead to winning the actual World Cup. But if I had to put some money on a team, I'd probably put it on Spain, because I think they'll be it. You know, they'll go far, they'll do well. They have a fairly decent draw if they get out of the group. I mean, the path towards the semi-finals looks sort of steady if you were to start scribbling in all the names on your wall chart. But yeah, I think I don't think these friendlies are necessarily going to change anyone's opinion of who we think the favourites are going to be, unless Germany or Spain defeat the other by 5-0 or something really crazy like that.
I think it was before Euro 2016, England went to Berlin and came from 2-0 and beat Germany 3-2, which, as evidence goes that these games mean nothing towards the actual main tournament itself, that is pretty much as good as it gets. I'll throw out some wildcard games for anyone listening at home who wants just to know some interesting games to keep an eye on. Thursday, Denmark play Panama, both of those going to the World Cup. Friday, we have Tunisia, Iran, Peru, Croatia, Serbia, Morocco, Poland, Nigeria, Portugal, Egypt, and Mexico play Iceland. All these completely bizarre matchups of teams who are thinking, you know, we're both in the World Cup, we need to play some teams that we don't have a history of playing. I can't imagine Serbia and Morocco have played each other very often before. Saturday, Sweden versus Chile. And then on the Tuesday, there's Tunisia, Costa Rica to keep an eye on, as well as Belgium, Saudi Arabia, who, of course, are both going to be at the World Cup. So perhaps Saudi Arabia are going to show themselves not to be the sort of 8-1 defeated team that they have been in the past, and get something at Belgium to give themselves some confidence. So we'll have all that covered on Market English over the next fortnight or so, and then we'll be back in earnest time to come back to La Liga, and we'll be covering all that in due course. Thank you then for joining us for this week's episode of Eye on La Liga, and thank you, Ewan, for coming on and talking this week.
No problem. I'll speak to you next time after Denmark-Panama.
Absolutely. The live Facebook broadcast after Denmark-Panama will be on the Market English Facebook page, and maybe if we don't get around to that, we'll be back in a fortnight's time anyway for another edition of Eye on La Liga. Take a moment to breathe during the international break. Enjoy it for what it is. Don't get too worked up about anything, and then get furious for when everything comes back in a fortnight's time. We'll see you then. Thank you for joining us.